am delighted to join with you today in celebrating the continued advancement of NAFIO. There is no need for me to talk about what we're going to do with NAFIO because we've been doing it for the last 22 years, and we're going to continue to do it. We have worked in the coalition on behalf of all historically black colleges, recognizing that we have the same national purpose, we have the same challenges, we have the same need to empower our communities. When I heard many of the speeches this morning, I couldn't help but thinking about the fact and realizing that we know the difference between rhetoric and reality. The rhetoric is good. It evolves from the civil rights movement. But we know that there are still children who can't graduate from high school because they don't have the resources. We know that schools are still ill-financed. Even my seven-year-old granddaughter recognizes that. She wanted to know when I was in Boston at another friend's school why all of the children in the second grade had a computer. And she's here in the D.C. public schools and she didn't have one. And although I tried to give her some rhetoric, she didn't buy the story. She said, I want to know why I don't have a computer in my classroom. Now, we see that on every level. The differences in technology, Leslie, the differences in the preparation of teachers, the fact that we have more men going to the warehouses of the criminal justice system. We have daycare that is essentially another form of warehouse, where we've seen 4 and 5 year olds already suffering from social and developmental problems. And the recent study from UCLA says that we're generating a whole new challenge in this country in terms of entering higher education and even colleges and universities across the board and high schools and elementary schools. So we've got to do something about that. I was so glad to see Mary Coleman here today because in spite of what the Department of Education is saying, the report that came out of the caucus of state legislatures talks about the enormous disparities in our communities. It talks about reforming the tax system for financing our schools. Unless we change the way public schools are financed, we will never change the quality of those institutions. And if you haven't looked at the National Urban Leagues report recently on the state of black America, I encourage you to look at that. We still are stuck in repression. I will close with saying, and I'm sorry, and you don't hear me. Thank you. If you look at that report, it talks about all the economic indicators of disparity. And I am always fascinated when I talk to people and they talk about how well we're doing in the black community. And I say to them, how well are we doing when we can say $8,000 in wealth compared to $80,000 in the white community? And that was a lie to me. How can we send our children to private schools? What will we do with these little vouchers of $2,000 to send them to Washington International, facing a $25,000 tuition? I know I can't afford to send mine, and many of you can't afford to send your grandchildren. So we still have some major challenges in this community, and many of the challenges are right at One DuPont Circle in the higher education community, where we have to have our voices loud and clear. We must continue to ask the tough questions, challenge the rhetoric, and continue to push those issues that not only enhance our universities, but enhance the African-American community and those who are rejected and neglected in the communities of this nation. I must speak to those issues of disparity and land-grant funds. That is a strong challenge. We are working on that. We still have states that are not giving the land-grant dollars to our universities. In many cases, the 1862 universities get a 7-to-1 match for every federal dollar they receive. They get $7. We still have universities that are struggling to get that $1. Legislation was passed nearly 5 years ago, and we're still working on that. So I would say to you in closing that decades ago, John Brown said that the cost of liberty is less than the cost of repression. We're still fighting repression. Thank you. Mary, where are you supposed to be? We're having the discussions at this time. We thank you, leaders, for coming and staying and being so patient. First, we're going to... Excuse me. Yes. Dr. Lewis Sullivan is the founding dean and president of Morehouse School of Medicine. He served also as the Secretary of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services from 1989 to 1993. Dr. Sullivan has been president of the Morehouse School of Medicine for more than two decades. He now serves as a leader with President's Issues Committee on the White House Initiative for Higher Education. Please come.
Thank you very much. I'd like to take perhaps just about no more than 10 minutes to tell you about an initiative to look at the health professions, a commission that I was honored to chair that the Kellogg Foundation funded, that looked at the status of minorities within the health professions and made some recommendations. So I'd like to review those with you, and I believe we have some slides. If we might have that first PowerPoint slide. Well, we won't have that PowerPoint slide, but let me tell you what the Commission found. First, the Commission operated from April of 2003 until September of 2004. We had a number of distinguished individuals who were members of the Commission, including such people as former Congressman Louis Stokes, former Deputy Attorney General Eric Holder, Dr. Joan Reed, the Dean for Diversity at Harvard Medical School, Dr. Regina Benjamin, who was then President of the Alabama State Medical Society, and a number of other individuals. The purpose of the Commission was to examine where we were as a nation in terms of diversity in the health professions. In brief, during the decades of the 60s, the 70s, and the 80s, we made significant progress in increasing diversity in the young people coming into medicine, dentistry, nursing, and the other health professions. But by 1990, we seemed to have run out of steam. To give you a specific example, in 1950, 2% of the entering medical students in the country were African American. By 1990, that had increased to 8%, a fourfold increase, but still far from the goals that had been set during the 60s and the 70s. And those goals were that blacks should represent approximately their ratio in the general population in medicine and the other health professions, i.e., 12 or 13% rather than 8%. So the Kellogg Commission looked at this question, not only in medicine, but also in nursing and dentistry, not only for African Americans, but Hispanic Americans and Native Americans. What we found is as follows. First, 25% of our population today is one or other minority group, i.e. African American, Hispanic American.